Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Menonorn Mini Talk for Gargantia on the Virtuous Planet, Episode 4, The Flute of Recollection. I'm Jero, along with Froshizzle.
Hey.
And we're joined by fellow Menonorn writer Smiley.
Hello.
And a co-host of the Anavision podcast, XCOM.
Hey.
So we are talking about episode 4 of Gargantia, which is pretty different from the other episodes in that there's no action to talk about here. Chamber's not killing guys or
which is too bad.
I know, right? Yeah. I want to see someone in the background get killed accident.
Yeah. He's not throwing lobster mechs around or anything like
that.
Oh,
man. Damn.
Yeah, so
vaporization or anything like that.
Yeah, so he's basically on standby for this episode, and that's pretty different from the other episodes. And what we learn about Red and Chamber at the start is that Rigid and, by extension, the others have basically sort of accepted him, and they're giving him a place to stay, which they call a dump, and they decided to give him some expenses for damages caused to the hangar, which totaled 750 million whatever dollars.
And let me say how retarded that is. He saves them. And then you're like, here's a bill.
Here's a bill for the damages.
Yeah, here's Earth money that you have no idea how to collect.
Didn't they say something about they're carrying his mech, so like they count as transport?
Yep.
They waived that, though.
I was like, wow.
Fee
really?
Waived.
Yeah,
bonus.
They waived a bunch of fees, but I mean, seriously, he's clearly an alien who has no, well, I guess he's not an alien, but, well, I don't know, the translation for alien in Japanese is a space dweller, so I guess you could say that he's a space dweller, but no, I mean, he has no way of making money, so I guess he just works for them.
He just has to
sell
work
his body to the girls.
Sell his body. They certainly like him enough.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, maybe Melty and Saya and Amy will buy in.
Him out.
Yes. That's awkward. But another way that they can make money is have Chamber do some work. And what's really funny about it is that he's trying to use gravity to lift all of these crates up, but there's one really funny scene, like a panning shot where it's just like, oh, silly Chamber.
Oh, yeah, where he gets tied up and it falls over. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my god, that was pretty funny.
See, I can't tell if he's doing that on purpose or it's just kind of a side effect of how he flies.
Yeah, I think it's how he flies. Yeah. It seems like there's an area of effect for the gravity thing, Mabobber. The magical gravity thing.
The magical gravity.
I'm surprised that when he was flying over the water didn't float or anything. When a few episodes back.
Remember that? Yeah, that was weird.
Or when he's grabbing, you know, other lobster mechs, that they don't just start floating as well.
Maybe that's why it was so easy for him to pull it up.
Oh, yeah, that
yeah,
could be.
Possibly. I mean, it was really hard for them. They thought they were going to take him underwater, but, you know, then they go for a carnival ride or something.
That was hilarious.
Now, as we see through the episode, he's talking a little more Japanese. He's talking almost like basically a broken Japanese.
How I would be if I was in Japan.
Yeah, like
pretty much.
And during the episode, he's sort of getting an opportunity to talk to other people, and you hear him talking with Amy first before the other two, and he talks about what he knows of life with the Galactic Alliance and being in the military and fighting all the time. He uses such words as useless and inefficient, as Amy is talking about things like having a little brother and, you know, the brother being sick, and we'll get to him in a little bit. But the first person that Amy recommends that he chats with is Dr. Oldham, who's one of the wisest people on the Gargantia fleet, and he asks him about life in the stars, and really there's not much known other than some books.
Right, I was like, he's got a massive library of all these books. And he gives him like a book on like it was like engines or whatever. And he was like, "Well, mm-hmm. this is all I can really give you. I don't have a spaceship." So
it's not even that he was asking, but he kind of demanded an exchange of information the entire time. Like, what can you tell me that's useful?
Right? What can I get out of this?
Yeah, I find it kind of funny how technology like this always seems to find a way to get lost. I understandably, it's very specialized kind of a field. But even so, you'd think that it being the way that some of them escaped the planet, they would at least, you know, hold on to records like this even better than just having tattered books lying around.
You know, the irony is it's probably because everything went digital.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we're in the same situation now.
Right, pretty much we are.
We're screwed.
So write everything down.
And the other person of significance that Red gets to chat with is Bebel, and as they talk about that whole thing about useless and inefficient and how Bebel being sick for Red, that would mean he's useless and therefore they wouldn't need him in the fleet. And I believe a word that was used in the Crunchyroll sub was cold. And what Bebel does in the two conversations that they have is he finds the right things to say that kind of makes Red stop and actually think, such as, what if the Hideous are completely beaten? What are you going to do then? What do you do? And Red's answer is kind of a typical answer for a military guy. Well, you just stand by and wait for instructions. What if those instructions don't come?
Yeah, you just sit there and wait forever, basically, what he was telling him. Like, I'll wait till they give me an order. And he doesn't, like you just said, he doesn't really think for himself.
Yeah, I thought it was very nice the way Bevel was able to kind of sort of relate their everyday life to Red as being on permanent standby. That was a very nice way to kind of make sense of their life, their way of life to kind of a military guy.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad they didn't convince Chamber that they're going to be living there, because Chamber's like, oh, it's pointless to try to relate to these people because we're just going to make it back to the fleet anyway.
Right. He's like, and for his credit, though, he is technically a machine, so he just wants to get back to the fleet and do his orders, which is fight in the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's one step toward building Red's compassion for the fleet as we progress through the series, and who knows what's in store for the major conflict toward the end. But we do see a flashback scene as Red is, as we've seen, he's basically taken a Hideous nail and he's sort of used his laser to sort of make holes in it, ends up, as Bebel sees, as a flute and plays it, and it recalls a memory from Red's past where he sees basically a kid, which we could assume is his son, being taken away into, I don't know, who knows where.
Yeah, it could either be like that, or maybe he had a little brother who was sick and they killed him because he's useless to it in their world. If someone's like sick, they're like, they just get rid of him. They have no military use, so it's like, eh.
Yeah, it's interesting to debate exactly what kind of relation they have. I personally wouldn't call him his son. They seem rather similar in age, but I don't know what space people do out there. clone is a pretty good bet.
They made a point of saying that he has earned the right to reproduce at the very beginning of the series. I doubt he has a child.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and Red is 16, I believe. And of course, I mean, that's not old enough to have a kid that old, so I'll take that in consideration that it is his brother.
I think if you take that into account, how they actually do still reproduce, then it might not be a clone would be less of a bet, because I know in some kind of futuristic settings they would have, you know, oh, people don't reproduce anymore, they just, you know, clone people. But the fact that they specifically mentioned that, then I guess maybe he is Red's little brother or something like that.
I'm still going on the idea that they don't really have a home planet anymore, so they don't really have anyone to go back to, so it's like they kind of have maybe no choice but to use clones in that army. but who knows? We don't really know much about his Red's world anyway.
And you know, when he pulled that that claw out of his pocket, is it just me or is that suit really skin tight? So how the heck did he fit that a couple of those claws in his pocket?
Yeah, I wondered that too.
It's like how the ninja girls in that one show, I forget what it's called already.
Senran Kagura.
Yeah, Senran Kagura. There we go. That's how they hide all their ninja tools. You know, it's the same. It's another dimension. They have pockets to alternate dimensions.
And the flight suit. Most flight suits are like that. Anime. It's like it don't really make sense, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's like Ryo Hazuki from Shenmue. Just puts everything in his back pocket. And then the episode just ends with Red asking again about their location. Still not enough information for Chamber to gather. And that's how the episode ends. Not really a cliffhanger. Just kind of interesting. Just ends.
Mm-hmm. What I don't understand is you would think Chamber would know the location of Earth. Mm-hmm. Like, I was under the impression that Earth wasn't lost. It was just they thought Earth couldn't be habited anymore.
Right. I don't know how it was like. This isn't about the flood and beginning that. Yeah.
It sounded like as time went on, they kind of just forgot records about Earth. So it is possible that they no longer know where Earth is in relation. I think the language he used, at least with the subs that I watched, suggested that the space people, at least Red's people, thought of Earth as kind of like a myth, kind of an age old, like a really old tale that they would just talk about. They never really believed that it was true, perhaps. I'm not sure about the exact details of that. But if you take that into account, I can kind of see them, like, you know, not knowing where Earth is in relation to them. Maybe they don't even know where they are in relation to anything else.
That's
and so if they don't have really like a map or any sort of indication of that, from what little I understand of mapping through stars, then it might be a very time-consuming, difficult, possibly even impossible task to figure out where you are, depending on how far away, you know, the space people have gotten from Earth.
Yeah, because if you think about it, they've been just trying to survive at this point. I don't think mapping the stars has been their highest priority at the moment.
Well, yeah, that, and you got to think of the technology people have on Earth. Would Red's people help the Earthlings? Because they have really no advanced technology or weapons, so it's like they're useless. And if you use Red's terminology.
Yeah, they don't have GPS satellites.
Yeah, they don't have giant robots, no spaceships. So it's like, why would they help Earth anyway? Like, they're primitive to them. So.
I don't know. I mean, they're the origin. I would like to think that Avalon would like to reclaim Earth, because it kind of feels like that's kind of their end game.
They go to Earth and kidnap all the girls.
It sounded like they believed Earth was a complete lost cause.
True.
I think they said it was a flood. I'm not sure if anything else happened, but it sounded very devastating. Like they were literally kind of a last option forced off the planet, and they just completely abandoned it. You know, kind of like what would you call it? When you kind of condemn a place, you know, and say, "Oh, this place is no
kind
longer habitable."
Quarantine or whatever.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, so the thought of returning to, you know, a place that's completely screwed, if you will, excuse the language, never crossed their minds.
They're like, why do you want to go to a planet full of water? It sounds boring.
Never not thirsty.
Well, and apparently,
you can't drink the water.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. So for some fun moments in this episode, we already mentioned Chamber lifting and having trouble with that. Melty, the youngest girl that we see in the series, is constantly trying to get Amy to hook up with Red.
A wing girl, as it were.
Yeah.
They fly too.
Yep. That was another funny moment too, to mention the Amy coming up on the hang glider and then kicking Pinion.
For
constantly saying, we should just get rid of this guy.
Yeah, he's like the only one that's like against it now. It's like, come on, bro. Get over it.
A moment when they first met Bebel, Amy saw some clothes that were hanging, and she didn't want Red to see him for fear of embarrassment.
That is such a chick thing to do.
Yep. It was like her pajamas or something like that.
Yeah,
nothing really revealing.
They looked less revealing than what she has on normally. Honestly,
right?
They were like long sleeves and stuff. That's what I saw, at least.
yeah, it wasn't like anything you would think Bellows or Ridget would wear.
No lingerie.
Saya also.
Right.
And then we also
passed it off as her brother's clothes, really.
The bright pink, yes.
Hey, you know, he doesn't know anything about this culture.
This is true.
And then we also mentioned the water from a bit earlier, is that when it rains, everybody loves to collect the fresh water.
Yeah, they enter scramble mode. Hurry and get the water.
Yeah.
Get the buckets and everything.
Actually, like, it's almost as if they don't know how to boil water, because that usually solves most of your problems, if not all.
Not entirely, because salt water is actually very notorious to be very hard to filter. And it's really, like, even now, it's not very cost effective to try and filter it. But I totally won't get into that.
I'm pretty sure they have like solar water thing, you know, like those things where you put water in it and just from the sunlight it'll evaporate. And
it's not very efficient though. Like possible, it's not nearly enough to get enough fresh water for that many people, even if you were to do something like that.
Fair enough.
What I was actually gonna say was, it's kind of weird that they're all in a frenzy, because you would think the planet being covered in water, that it would rain an awful lot because of the whole that's kind of how rain works. Evaporated water condenses and rains down. You'd think that would happen a lot. So what difference would it make if they collected all the water? I mean, it's good to collect water, but it should rain an awful lot on that planet.
Yeah, but I think they're always moving, so it's like maybe they're not in one spot all the time. I don't know. Still, that you would. I think I.
Yeah, they always have to go with the galaxy current.
Right.
And also, wouldn't want to drink water that light bugs have been through. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or, you know, pirates taking leaks. You know, I don't want any of that. The dead people that red killed. They're dust particles.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would assume that's also where they dump the waste. I mean,
probably. Yeah.
It makes sense. I
mean, and all this under the water is like they sewed that like a factory underneath there, so it's like that can't be good, you know.
The entire planet is just a kid's pool.
Gross. It's pretty gross. Speaking of kids, there's a lot of kids on that Gargantia.
Damn, oh yeah, yeah. Kids.
I was like, Jesus.
Hey, you gotta do something.
I guess so. You know.
And I guess, speaking of kids, so it sounds like, going back to the whole Red being authorized to reproduce, they say that, and then, you know, the media thought, at least to us, is that, you know, oh, he can get, you know, a girlfriend and all, whatever. I mean, maybe not the relationship, but the way he was talking in this episode, it sounded like he had no idea, like, what a family was. So it kind of makes you question, like, what exactly did they mean that he could reproduce? Like, is it some sort of sperm donor thing or something? Did they even have relationships at all? Because it really sounded like they didn't.
Yeah,
that sounds very detached, you know.
Yeah, the process would be incredibly scientific, and
it'd probably be just purpose of doing that to have more children to populate the military. Maybe that's why I can see him doing that.
I think we're also forgetting about something. Red may be like an extreme case.
Uh-huh.
Because Red was like an awesome, dedicated soldier. Maybe not everybody is like that.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking the same thing.
So, I mean, maybe he could have gotten a girlfriend or be allowed to get a girlfriend and have relations and have kids, but he just isn't like that. All he knows is the military. He doesn't know anything else. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that Avalon doesn't have relationships. It just means that he doesn't know about relationships because he grew up in the military.
Mm-hmm. And that gets back to what Fosh and I mentioned in episode one, comparing him to Sagara Sosuke from Full Metal Panic, who's very much like that. But
yes,
in this episode with Red, there was much more advancement toward him learning another life, unlike anything Sosuke did throughout Full Metal Panic or Second Raid. So, episode 4, I believe that wraps up the podcast. Any closing thoughts? Good episode, I would say.
It was an okay episode. Not bad. A lot of talking. I would have to mention something that 2DT said on Twitter that was like made me like well sad, that he thinks Amy's gonna, her death might be that what hang glider not opening, she just falls to death. And I was just like, it. Oh my
would
god,
you would do
like,
it.
That's brutal. I was like, no.
Especially how she just like forward flips right off of stuff.
Because people warned her before to be careful on it, and like, oh, the death flag.
Like, death flag.
Damn it. So I was like, oh no. But I think, yeah, it was a good episode anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so for Fosh, Smiley, and XCOM, I'm Jero. We will see you next time.
See ya. ような手で少しずつ風の行方をつかむように